All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 33 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We are now resuming our studies, having completed our look at ancient Egypt and ancient Mesopotamia. So today we have a new beginning. We are going to start studying a new topic. Now, to begin studying this new topic, it's useful to kind of remind ourselves of the basics, the overall things that we learned, that we discovered concerning these two previous civilizations, ancient Egypt and ancient Mesopotamia. These civilizations, we have a word for them. We have a really important vocabulary word that we use to describe civilizations that ancient, which where the people lived in a certain way that is, well, quite simply, disconnected from the way that we live. So when we study their history, it's a peculiar challenge. Because the best reason to study history, the normal and proper reason to study history, is to look for connections between the past and the present. It is to help us understand the world that we live in by uncovering how it came to be that way. So we're looking for people and places and civilizations that are connected to us. But the thing about the archaic world is they are mostly disconnected from us. So it's not easy to make the connection. And so that's what we strove to do in the early part of the course, was to set up some anchor facts so that we could navigate our way back into the past. We could understand what our connection is to the archaic past, even though it's really, really far back and really quite separate from us. And then we took a look at those civilizations. We took a look at Egypt, and we took a look at Mesopotamia. And we learned how we did, even though the way that we live is very disconnected from them, we found out how we became connected, how we did become connected to them, how it became that we are somewhat interested in their history. So we learned how to read their languages, for instance, right? We learned how to use the Rosetta Stone to decipher Egyptian hieroglyphs. And we also found that there was a Rosetta Stone for Mesopotamia as well. What was it called, Patrick?
The Behistun inscription.
All right, thank you. Good, right? So we have these linguistic bridges to the past, and then we have all these documents, such as the Code of Hammurabi, or when we're looking at hieroglyphs, it could be the Book of the Dead, something like that from any ancient civilization. We read about it, we find out what those people were like, and we see them living in a certain way. All right. In that way, I call the archaic plateau. Ooh, that's a cool expression. I'm going to go ahead and chat that into the chat box. I call that level of development of archaic peoples the archaic plateau. This word plateau is quite a good word. It's a French word, and we are connected to the French people, not just because of what happened this weekend, but by many other means. And so this is a French word that we use, plateau, and it can mean a variety of different things. So I wanted to focus on this word so you can understand when Mr. Powell says the archaic plateau, what is he talking about? So you might be interested in pulling up the self-test for today also in relation to this question. And by the way, I wanted to point out the grading key is on the Lecture 33 resources as well. And so there's different definitions for a plateau, but one of them has to do with kind of geography. In particular, this is kind of a cool diagram here. It shows us, just focus on the yellow part, it shows us what? The tallest mountain in the world. A cross-section of the tallest mountain in the world, Mount Everest, right? So just looking at the yellow part. And if you were climbing Mount Everest, which way would you want to go on this diagram? Would you want to go up this right-hand side? Or would you want to go up this left-hand side? Patrick, immediately Patrick's hand shoots up and he's got an idea. Which one, Patrick?
Left, because it looks like there's more of a bit of a flat, more flat spaces there to rest, perhaps.
Oh, a flat space to rest. How interesting that you should mention this idea of a flat space where you can rest. Guess what that's called? Oh, anybody know all about Mr. Powell's leading questions? Guess what an area is at a certain height that's flat and you can rest there? Rosetta?
A plateau.
Very good. Nice pronunciation there, Rosetta. Wow, you've got some French lessons under your belt there. Excellent. A plateau, as they would say in French, or a plateau, as we would say in American English, with a little bit of an O that stretches out. All right, so we've got this plateau here. Okay, so it's an area at a certain height where if you're climbing a mountain, it sure is nice to get a plateau because you can rest there. All right, and the word plateau also means a certain level of development. So that is our key vocabulary word for today, and we are talking today about the archaic plateau and a new beginning that is going to allow human beings to move past that plateau. Okay, so let's talk about this. So what did human beings have at the level of development that we have seen so far? Right? What were some of the things that the Egyptians and the Mesopotamians had that was, well, it was better than just being illiterate but nomadic barbarians, that's for sure. So it was better than that, but there were only certain things that the people had. So what was that thing that they had that allowed us to know their history? That was one thing that they have, at least, even though they are stuck on a certain level, an archaic level, they did have something. The thing that allows us to know their history. What's that called? What is it that allows us to know history? What do we have to have? Why is the Rosetta Stone the key? Why is the Behistun Stone inscription the key? Julia?
Writing.
Okay, so at the archaic plateau, people do have writing. That's one part of it. Okay, so this is different than, I guess I would say, before you reach the archaic plateau in history, before that, it's a prehistorical plateau, and there's a bunch of different things going on back there. But the main thing that people don't have at the prehistoric plateau is writing. That's the one thing that really, really separates the archaic peoples of history, even from their more primitive prehistoric ancestors or other civilizations or other tribal peoples and primitive peoples that are still stuck at the prehistorical level. Okay? So, we are at the archaic plateau, we have writing. Okay, that's something that human beings do have. So we can learn about their life, but what we see is, well, it's a very limited human life, certainly compared to how wonderful life is today. Because at that archaic level, at that archaic plateau, people don't have any significant science or technology. They don't have any of that. Certainly nobody, no pharaohs are walking around with iPhones. And the chariots that they ride in don't have internal combustion engines or any of that, right? Never mind going to the moon. So they are stuck because they don't have that kind of science and technology. But for most people, the being stuck at that level means that, well, there's something that you have to do pretty much all the time. What is life like at the archaic plateau for most people? What do they have to do pretty much all the time? Almost all the people, almost all the time. What do they have to do? Rosetta. Sorry. Oh, you said it, but I didn't. I think it was cut slightly. So say it again, please.
Farm.
Yes, right, as a verb, right? They have to farm. In other words, they have to grow food. They have to stay in a particular spot, and they have to grow food, which, because they're stuck at that level without modern science and technology, they can only grow so much of it, and it's very hard for them to do it. So in order to do it successfully, where do they have to live? What's that special kind of place where they have to live in order to succeed? Let me give you an example. Oh, here is Mother Nature in all her very, very mean glory. And then, except, there's something here. Quiet, Henry.
Rivers.
Ah, what are so great about rivers?
Well, it allows them to survive.
How? What is that resource that
it
rivers
gives them water and rich soil.
Mm-hmm, right, exactly. Rivers carry water, and they also, when they flood, they also deposit soil. In fact, do you guys know what this is right here? Why this is such an amazing part of ancient Egypt? All of this region and part of why it's all so green, you know why? Because the Nile River put that there. It wasn't there in way back, thousands of millions of years ago. I don't know how long it took, but it wasn't there. It wasn't always there. The Nile River deposited this there. It's called an alluvial fan. And any major river like the Nile or the Mississippi or any other of the big ones out there in the world, you will see that they will leave a big area that kind of sticks out into the water. The rivers put that there. That's the soil that the rivers took from higher up in the land and put it down next to the ocean. And when they deposit that, gradually it builds up and it makes new land. So yeah, the rivers don't just carry water, they carry new land, and it's the same everywhere. So there are river valley civilizations in Egypt. There was one in Egypt, of course, and we know that there was one in Mesopotamia, because Mesopotamia means... Anybody? Patrick?
The land between two rivers.
The land between the rivers. All right. Some of that's still fresh. Good. So, right, there's another river valley civilization. India and China also had river valley civilizations. These were the earliest places where civilizations arose because nature provided an environment where primitive people who don't have any science and technology can still survive, which is very nice and convenient because it takes time for people to figure out how to make science and technology, how to invent that, how to figure out and think about the world in a certain way and then understand it and then build things and so on. It takes an awful lot of time, as history shows us. And so at that archaic plateau, at least if you're in a river valley civilization, you can still get by. All right, so we have these different features of life at that level, right? It's there's writing, but about the most that people can do to survive is primitive farming. Okay, so what else? What else did we see about life at this early level of development in human beings? What else was common in both Egypt, as we saw, and in Mesopotamia and in Persia and so on? What were some of the other features of life that we saw? I'll give you a hint. What did the Egyptians think of the Nile? Did they think of it scientifically as a river that flows through a continent down to the sea? What did they think of it, Opal?
Like a gift from the gods that made them able to live there.
Okay, a gift from the gods. Okay, in Mesopotamia, when one city would conquer another city, what did the people think? Rosetta?
The gods were dueling with each other, and one of the gods won.
And one of the gods was winning. Okay, exactly. So, at that early stage of human life, people think of the world as controlled by gods. This is common in all the societies that we see. Various supernatural powers. Rosetta is saying kind of dueling sometimes, certainly, but in any other sense, kind of controlling the world, right? And so therefore, if the gods control the world and the pharaohs can talk to the gods, what should you do? What should you build? Or maybe you have to build it even if you don't want to, but what would you build in a society like that in which you have god kings that work with the gods? Rosetta, I can't tell if your hand is still up or not. Oh gosh, sometimes I ask the question from a certain angle and it just doesn't quite reach you guys. What did the Egyptians build that reflected their belief that the world was controlled by gods? Patrick?
The pyramids.
The pyramids. Thank you very much. Exactly. Okay, so we have the ziggurats in Mesopotamia, and we have kind of this whole society that includes a very strong belief that pretty much everything in life is controlled by gods, because human beings don't really feel like they're in control of much, do they? Right? I mean, they can barely get along in life. And so they have this sense that everything is controlled by something else, which they can't explain. And so they have this idea that is a part of their society, that the world is controlled by gods. Okay, so this is also something else. And then we got one other feature of life at this archaic plateau where people are stuck on this level. And that feature is called the pharaoh, or the Patesi, or the Lugal, or the Emperor, or just, you know, fill in the blank. What is that other feature of that is constant in human life? Goes by all those different names. Opal?
Like one person who is just like really super powerful leader.
Mm-hmm.
Who, like, makes all the decisions and does everything.
Okay. So, somebody rules people. Right? People are ruled, and typically, in organized society, they are ruled by a group of people who are all around this one leader, the monarch. He has different names in different societies, right? So, we know that people lived in river valleys because that was the only place where they could get along, but kind of being stuck in those places also meant that in that organized social life of theirs, that, well, they ended up being ruled by other people. All right. So, we have these various features of human life. And, well, people were stuck there. People were stuck there. That's why I call it the Archaic Plateau. It's a primitive life. It's a life full of superstitions. It's a brutal life where human beings are very barbaric towards each other and politically unfree. So these are these, you know, big differences that we can see. This, we feel, I think it makes sense, right, that we feel disconnected from life at that level because we don't live that way anymore. We don't feel primitive, right? We feel advanced scientifically and technologically, right? And we don't feel like the weather is governed by the gods. We study the science of Mesopotamia, the science of meteorology, rather. and we know about gravity, and we study physics, and we have soared into the heavens and walked on the moon. And so, you know, this is a very completely different way of life, a scientific way of life. And in terms of how our societies are organized, we have a lot more freedom. So that's not us. We are not stuck at that archaic level. So how did we do that? How did human beings go from primitive, superstitious, and brutal to advanced, scientific, and free? How'd they do that? Well, historically speaking, it's because of one people. Historically speaking, one people advanced us that way. One people pushed us up and off of the archaic plateau. And those people were the Greeks. So that is our new beginning. We are now going to learn the story of the ancient Greeks. We are going to learn the story of the classical world. Because in this classical world, as ancient as it is, it's not modern. So it's not exactly what we see around us. We're not going to see any Greeks in togas flying airplanes. All right, they don't have that. They are not going to be riding around in cars, and they are not going to be talking to each other on smartphones. So it's not modern life that we're going to be seeing in ancient Greece. But it's not archaic either. It's a new level. And we use the word classical here because we have this development that the Greeks are going to begin. They are going to set it in motion for the first time. And they are going to start pushing us towards the wonders of modern life. And truly, they are the ones that get the credit for it, because it's often the case, and so important in history, that the first people are the ones that do anything are the most important ones. And so we're going to study these ancient Greeks, and we're going to see something very interesting about them. Is that they started off at the Archaic Plateau, just like everybody else. Why wouldn't they, right? I mean, they weren't born knowing all of the wonderful stuff that they knew better than others. No, they had to learn those things. They had to develop those things. So the Greeks started where everybody else started, at the archaic level. They were primitive too. They were superstitious too. And they were brutal too, just like everybody else. But somehow, and here is this beautiful, miraculous, exceptional thing that is ancient Greece. Somehow, they decided that human life at that level is not good enough. the life that everybody else was living, the life that everybody else had accepted for thousands of years, they would not accept. They looked at human life and they said, this isn't enough. We can do better. And basically, the way that they did that was by changing how they thought of themselves, how they thought of human beings, and what their expectation was of human life. I think the best, simplest way to understand this, which we'll talk about more tomorrow, is that the Greeks changed the meaning of the word human. They changed the meaning of the word human. They said, it's not enough to say human beings are primitive, barbaric farmers who need to be ruled. No, that's not good enough. We're not going to be satisfied with thinking of the world as full of gods. We're not going to be satisfied by living in this way. Human life can be something else. As we'll see, some of the things that they invented, they came up with this. No, but there was nobody else that was thinking this way. So we could say they created it, they invented it, they came up with it for the first time. They understood that human life could be beautiful. Wait till you see the art of the ancient Greeks. They understood that human beings could accomplish great things, that human beings could be heroic. They could be amazing. Men could be strong and women could be beautiful and they could do amazing things and could build a society in which such human beings got what they deserved. And guess what? Got what they deserved doesn't mean to be ruled. What does it mean? If human beings can be better than what they were, at that archaic level, guess what they deserve? That other thing that the Greeks invented. They deserve to be what? They deserve to be free. That is the great classical discovery, invention, creation of the Greeks, among so many things that they did. They were the first to understand, to explain, to create a society in which human beings could be free. The Greeks were the first people to believe in the pursuit of happiness. We'll see, they had a very special word for that. And they had a very special understanding of what human happiness is because of what they understood human beings to be. So that's where we're going to work on this definition. What is a human being? That's what I'm going to send you home with as a question today. I'm going to send you home with the question, what is a human being? In your own thought, in your own mind, it's probably not a question that you've ever had, really thought of personally. Okay? And it's okay if it's not easy to come up with an answer, or that you don't get an answer. Okay? But that's kind of, we could call that a rhetorical question. In other words, it's just to get you ready to hear what the Greeks thought. Okay? What did the archaic people think of themselves as human beings? Well, we've seen that, right? We've seen that archaic people said, okay, we're farmers. We live together and we're ruled by our rulers. And, well, we see gods in everything. And this is about all there is for us. But the Greeks didn't accept that. What about you? What are your thoughts there? What does it mean to be a human being? That's what we're going to be pursuing in this next lecture. And I'm going to tell you what the Greek answer was. And we'll go from there. Okay? Cool. All right. Well, this is our new beginning. And thanks to the Greeks, we're going to see progress. We're going to see human life getting better and better and better. And the gradual rise of the modern world. It takes a long time. But the Greeks helped us to get there. All right, folks. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye, Mr.
Bye-bye.
Bye.